Welcome to Joy of the Gospel, a renewal for parish life based on three principles: good community, good preaching and teaching, and good music. Unit 1, A Change of Era, Not an Era of Change, is presented by Father Tony Percy, Vicar General of the Archdiocese of Canberra and Goulburn, and Angela McCabe, a consultant psychologist.
So thank you very much to Tony Farley for coming from Sydney, introducing our program tonight, which is called The Joy of the Gospel, which is a renewal for parish life based on three principles, as he mentioned: a good community, good preaching and teaching, and good music. These are the three elements that come forward or have come forward in any study of parish life in the last 20 or 30 years, particularly the United States, as you know, which is the Americans are very keen on doing lots of research, but also the research in Australia has shown this. So let us begin with our Unit 1 tonight. There are three units tonight. This is the first one we have tonight, and here is the basic topic of the unit: a change of era, not an era of change. So this was given to us by Pope Francis in October 2015 at a gathering, I believe in Florence, and it's worth your contemplation just to stop and think for a minute, what on earth is he talking about? A change, we are living in a change of era, not just an era of change. A lot of societies have times of change, but he's talking about something that's fundamentally happening in the world and also in the Catholic world. We should make a basic statement before we talk about the change of era, a basic principle, which is very important, obviously, in Catholic life, where we try to preserve and conserve. And that principle is, unless we change, we cannot conserve and communicate. We're trying to communicate the riches of our tradition. And as you know, the Christian faith is one of the world's great religions, and all the world's great religions have three elements to it: a creed, a code, and a cult. We believe in certain things. We believe in the Apostles' Creed, the Nicene Creed. We have a code. We believe we behave in certain ways, the Ten Commandments or the Beatitudes or both, if you like. And we believe there's a cult. We worship in a certain way. We have seven sacraments. And this is the format, as you know, of the Catechism of the Catholic Church, which in my opinion is one of the great documents in the Church's history. It has a final section on prayer. But let's focus on that. If we want to communicate the creed, the code and the cult, we have to move with the times in a sense. So the substance of faith is one thing, but the way we express it is different. And the Church has shown an uncanny ability to sort of change over time in order to communicate these great truths. So what might be the change of era? Just stop and think for a minute. I'll give you 20 seconds just to stop and think, what might the Pope be talking about in this change of era? So 20 seconds. Think about what he's talking about. All right, I've listed 5 points. You could list more, no doubt. If you lived in the year 1850, you lived till you were 45. If you were born in the year 2000, you live till you're 85. If you're born in the year 2050, coming up, you're going to live till 100. And the experts are now saying that the person who's going to live to 200 has already been born. Seems incredible. But it's true. Now think about what impact that has on, for instance, on marriage. Years ago, if you were going to marry, then the idea was that you'd be married forever and until death do us part, which was basically 20 to 25 years. Now that time frame is 50 to 60. Just talking to someone tonight who said their in-laws are celebrating 60 years of marriage. In 1970, a young man married at the age of 23, the medium age, the girl was 21. We come up to the year now, 2018. The man is 33 on average and the woman is 31. So things have changed dramatically there. When people are living much longer, they have to be far more creative in their careers and what they do with their life. Longevity, with all the adventures and all the challenges that entails. A second point of this change of era would be unbelief. So at the time of Anzac, we had basically 98 to 99% of Australians believing in God. And now we have possibly, at the latest census, just below 70%. I think of the implications of that. Usually when belief goes, then trust sort of dissipates in relationships and in general in society. It's been a massive change. We don't know why this is the case, but we know it is the case. So the proclamation of the Christian faith is in a different setting now because of this almost automatic sense that people have that there is no God. A third point, undoubtedly, I'm sure some of you have thought of this as human sexuality. Who would have thought that in the year 2018, the average age for viewing pornography is 11 and dropping? It's an incredible statistic, not one we should be proud of. And what that's doing, think of the consequences, what that's doing to young men's idea of sexuality, of women, and of course what young women are thinking about it as well. Massive change in the way we have viewed the opposite sex and intimate human relations. A fourth point would be communications. Extraordinary. I was reading just today that perhaps in 5 years' time, when you buy something over the internet, e-commerce, it'll be delivered to you by a drone. Incredible. Who would have thought of such a thing just even 5 years ago? But these things are realities. The speed of communication, the sheer depth of communication now is extraordinary, the pace of it. Think of your email, think of the internet, think of how what people do at home, when you get on a bus, when you go to a restaurant, people in a sense don't even talk to each other anymore, they're on their phones. The communication revolution has been an extraordinary change. So not just an era of change, but a change of era. Finally, leisure. Jews and Christians institutionalized rest. They had a day for rest. That's all gone. It was a very sensible idea to do this, of course. So we rest physically and psychologically. Theologically, it gives us time to look back at our work and finish it. But we have to struggle for this now. It's not easy to rest, as all of us know. We all struggle with the balance between work and rest. So indeed, just these five areas, we could say, yes, that change of era. And as I said at the beginning, you could think of your own points of view of how this is a change of era. When we have change, we can have two attitudes. And in the church, we can see this very well. One is of denial. So if you took this figure here, Pope Pius IX, who was one of the longest serving popes, 1846 to 1878, he was nicknamed Pio Nono in the Italian, because he was no to everything. He said the church can't possibly reconcile herself to modern forms of thought, democracy and economics. He's an incredible pontific, a very holy guy in many ways apparently, but just didn't want to move with the times. So when he died in 1878, the feeling in Italy was so negative towards priests that they thought was so anti-clerical that one of the cardinals suggested they should elect the new pope down in Malta with the protection of the British Navy. It's an amazing historical point, but it's true, historical fact. Anyway, the cardinals stayed in Rome. They elected a new pope who was 68 years of age. His name was Leo XIII, became famous for Leo XIII for the great reforming papacy that he was, and he systematically changed the church in five areas. So instead of the denial, he said, right, let's embrace the change. Otherwise, if we don't change, we won't be able to communicate the riches of our faith. So let's have a look at what he did. And then I'll finish and it's over to Angela. In theology, he said, let's go back to the sources. This was particularly true of the thought of St. Thomas Aquinas, but it was true of all of the theology. Don't take what people have said over the ages. Let's go back to the sources so that we can go forward. Pope John Paul II used to say that unless we have a memory, we don't have a future. So let's go back and really remember what the theology is all about so that we can go forward in a new setting. Pick out the principles on which we should conduct ourselves. We should think through these things philosophically and theologically. He said, look, let's open up the Bible to Catholics, which had largely been shut down by the Reformation. So the prayer we had tonight with Stephen, that wouldn't have happened 30 or 40 years ago because the Bible wasn't at the front and centre stage for Catholic prayers and Catholic liturgy. It is now, which is a wonderful thing. He said, open up the archives. We've got nothing to fear with history. open up the archive so we can actually see what's really happened. If we've made mistakes, we've made mistakes. We've done great things, we've done great things. Let's have a look at it. So you can see, as I go through these, you can see the sheer depth of the reform which he carried out until 1903, when the new Pope came in. Rerum Novarum, which was the very first modern social encyclical, extraordinary encyclical, meeting the challenges of the Industrial Revolution, the inequalities of wealth, and the challenge thrown out by the socialists. It's a magnificent document, very forward thinking, still informs our thinking today. And finally, he gave tacit approval to the separation of church and state, which was happening in the United States, which is a great revelation because up until the late part of the 18th century, the church was aligned very much with the state, with the kings. And so this liberated the church to be more independent, to have separation of church and state. So magnificent response from Leo XIII. We can have denial or we can have a wonderful response in order to communicate our faith. So with that ado, I hand you over to Angela for her psychology of change.
So without the wisdom of discernment, we can easily become prey to every passing trend. But then Pope Francis goes on to say, at other times, the opposite can happen. When the forces of evil induce us not to change, to leave things as they are, to opt for a rigid resistance to change, yet that would be to block the working of the Spirit. I found those words so apt and so moving. As a psychologist, I'm often called to help people and groups transition through both expected and unexpected changes. Because change tends to trigger strong emotional responses in us, including fear and anxiety. Because in general, as people, we don't like uncertainty. We like to know what's going to happen next. Yet when it is well managed, change is the key to growth and improvement and an opportunity for renewal. In fact, change cannot be avoided. Small and large changes are occurring all the time. To quote Heraclitus, you cannot step twice into the same river because it's constantly flowing and changing, as is life. And today, Father Tony has given us concrete examples of the positive power of change within the church, and just as importantly, what can happen when she resists change. So what do we need to understand if we're to be effective leaders in this change of era and thus conserve the core teachings and values of the church? And the points that follow are practical rather than philosophical. I am no theologian, but I encourage you to consider them in light of what you hope to achieve within your parishes at a practical level. So the first point is, how we perceive the change will determine how well we adapt to it. Our thoughts influence our emotions. So how we think about a situation is going to be critical. As leaders, we can choose to look to the future with excitement and confidence. And this will foster optimism. And optimism is infectious. Our perception of change is also influenced by a number of other factors. And this includes our cultural background, our religion, and our social peer group. And this in turn influences our attitudes and beliefs and how we think about a situation. On a more practical level, your general health, your lifestyle, and your habits will influence how well you cope with stress. So if you're physically ill or you have a difficult situation happening, you will have lower energy and your ability to cope will be compromised. And this is a bit that really interests me as a psychologist. Your personality style or your personality traits will influence how well you deal with change. Now, about personality, we all have a mix of useful and less useful personality traits that may impact. We don't get to choose these traits, they are largely inherited, but we do have a responsibility to manage them. If we are prone to and give in to being selfish, egocentric, and suspicious, we will resist changes that we believe don't suit us, even if they are beneficial to others or the community. Being self-righteous and obsessional, mea culpa here, or socially isolated increases the likelihood we won't consider alternative points of view and new ideas. And these personality factors influence whether we view change as unpredictable, threatening, as an unpredictable, threatening upheaval that will only result in personal loss, or whether we see it as an opportunity for growth and renewal. As I wrote this, I wondered about the personality differences between the two popes and what they might have been feeling. I wondered if Pope Pius, for example, was more prone to rigidity and pessimism. I certainly think he was frightened of what might be lost if we changed, and I have much sympathy for him with that. Sometimes we find it difficult and very human to consider other views, because we fear agreeing or going along with something against our will or something that might compromise our values. But considering other views doesn't mean we have to agree. But it is essential to mutual understanding and to developing a trusting relationship. Being able to understand views contrary to your own is maturity and essential to leadership and progress. So the key point here is if we take time to listen to others, self-reflect, and to pray to enhance our self-awareness, we can increase the discernment that Pope Francis refers to and make choices about good changes and not so good changes, and also to choose our attitude. You as leaders need to understand too that change is a process, not an event. There are normal psychological changes you may observe in both individuals and groups. So when a change is at hand, the immediate emotional reactions may include shock, denial, disbelief, fear and anger, especially if the change is unexpected or the people affected feel uninformed. You may observe a mental response that psychologists refer to as cognitive dissonance. This is when your internal belief or perception about an event differs to the external reality. This causes inner conflict and emotional discomfort. And in trying to cope with that, people may take refuge in denial, resist the change, or even engage in problematic behaviours. In its most severe form, people will actually try and sabotage the change. Over time, this usually settles for most people, and the new reality becomes more comfortable as it is internally accepted. So let's get practical. We can help people move through these changes faster by supporting them as they work through their emotions. As we noted, the emotions may include grief, anger, and fear, as well as happiness and excitement. One of the fascinating things about being human is that we can feel more than one emotion about the same thing at the same time. Interestingly too, anger is often a cover for fear or grief, especially amongst males in our culture, because to express fear is considered unmanly. So a frightened man in particular may present as an angry man. As leaders, your role is to positively reinforce this acceptance. This means listening, really listening, and acknowledging the difficulties and any pros and cons and using praise and encouragement. Keeping people involved in any proposed changes so they don't fall into feelings of hopelessness or powerlessness and become depressed and passive. Above all, your role is to manage the natural emotions that will ensue with empathy and understanding. And keep it real. By acknowledging both the positives and negatives truthfully, we engender trust. A whitewash will just leave people feeling cynical and betrayed. With every change, there are real and or perceived losses. For example, a loss of status and identity and predictability, belonging, expectations, and mourning is a natural response. In fact, mourning can occur even after a happy event. For example, your son or daughter gets married. You may be happy about the wedding, love the new in-laws, but sad that this stage of their childhood and their life with you is over, because family life has changed forever. Normal adjustment and healing will vary between individuals. It takes time. 18 months is normal. After a major loss of bereavement, up to 5 years can be considered normal. Now, proposed change may be global, but it begins and ends with individuals. This means as leaders, we must start with ourselves. So each of us have a responsibility to be clear about what you're trying to achieve. We're not trying to change the faith, for example, but change how we communicate it. We need to acknowledge our emotional responses and honestly examine our belief system. If we have any signs of physical or psychological or emotional stress, we need to manage those. And we need to think hard about how proposals may impact others and develop the skills we need. For example, we may need to enhance our listening skills. Because if we are not coping with change, how can we expect others to follow us? When our own house is in order, we can then help others by taking the following steps. By having and imparting a clear, coherent, and cohesive vision, anticipating and addressing any fear, anger, and resistance, and expect them because they're normal. Keeping the community informed, involved, and identify positive role models to help share the message. Be proactive, encourage, coach, mentor, and resolve conflict, because failure to resolve internal external conflicts is the number one obstacle to change. And then, if you can understand the causes of resistance, that doesn't mean you're agreeing, just understanding, stay in positive communication with any anti-change factions. Recognise and respect the cultural differences and different values, beliefs and practices between individuals and groups, even within the same community. I mean, we are a Catholic church, universal church, but we're incredibly diverse. People from many different backgrounds, many different beliefs. We may share the one faith, but it may be expressed in many different ways. And we need to take the time to understand that and what it might mean. In conclusion, please remember 2 points. Embrace and communicate the vision so that others might follow you with confidence. And use empathy and listen to truly understand. So thank you for your time.